Seven Strike Valley podcast. We're feeling pretty good about the Yankees because they just took 3 out of 4 from a very good Detroit Tigers team where they faced the last 3 Cy Young Award winners and a very good Rick Porcello, and they took 3 out of 4. So I'm pretty satisfied with how they're playing. How do you guys feel about us in that league?
Yeah, they didn't beat all of them, but they actually didn't lose to any.
Yes, that's true. Even against
Price didn't get the win.
Even against David Price, he went to like what 8 2/3 innings or something like that.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, that was like a hell of a debut in a Tigers uniform. But unfortunately, he gave up a couple solo dingers, I think, and then he was matched by Kuroda. Kuroda matched him instead of the bullpen, and pretty much all that happened was the fact that Kuroda obviously is not really capable at this point of lasting as deep into games as David Price. So the Tigers still had relatively decent relievers left while the Yankees were relying on Matt Daly. So that just happens.
Just got to tip your cap at that point.
Yeah, it's like congratulations, Tigers. You hit a solo homer against Matt Daly. Would you like a cookie?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm feeling very good about the series because they're very close to winning all 4 of them. If you're the Tigers, you're feeling like garbage. Because it's not only that they got beat by they beat the Cy Young winners and they got close to winning all 4, but just think about who was pitching for the Yankees. You had a 39-year-old who is obviously slowing down, is near the end of his career. Mm-hmm. Shane Green, Chris Capuano, and what was the other one?
I think
I'm already forgetting.
Didn't McCarthy start the first one?
Oh, yeah. McCarthy. And honestly, McCarthy's the best of the bunch in talent level wise.
If I'm a Tigers fan, I don't feel too bad about. I mean, obviously, it's a little annoying losing a pitching matchup of Max Scherzer against Brandon McCarthy, but you know that'll happen. What you don't want is David Price not beating Hiroki Kuroda, and Justin Verlander not beating Chris Capuano, which I think was the most shocking game of the series. Because Capuano, he struck out 8.
and this is not like
kind of rolling with like, yeah, he was just rolling with that changeup, I think. And
yeah, and the Tigers are one of the best lineups in baseball.
Mm-hmm. And even though Miguel Cabrera didn't play the last game of the series, when Shane Green was on the mound, Shane Green still had a pretty good lineup. They had like Ian Kinsler, Victor Martinez. So yeah, they found the Tigers fan. I'm pretty frustrated that they couldn't score. Period against Shane Green, and I don't think they scored against Capuano either, right? But they scored once. They scored like once against Capuano, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, they won. They won a 5-1.
Yeah, no, I was saying
It was the one. It was the one unearned run because of the error by Jeter.
Ah, yes.
Oh, right.
No Jeets.
No Jeets. Yeah. So if you're, I feel like the Yankees kind of just. It felt like kind of a steal. I mean, because honestly, I thought they were only going to win maybe 1 or 2 of them. Maybe they'd beat Price because you had Kurt on the mound, or maybe you'd beat Scherzer because you had McCarthy on the mound, but you didn't think you'd win 3 of them, almost 4 of them. I thought Capuano was going to get crushed. I thought Green was going to get crushed, even with the bad lineup. So, if you're the Yankees, I mean, I'm not a huge proponent of the whole momentum thing and making teams, but if you're in the Yankees clubhouse, you feel pretty good that you kind of feel like you stole 3 out of 4 games from the Tigers.
Yeah, and at this point,
and now you're playing an Indians team, which isn't that great.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, now that you've won with Chris Capuano against Justin Verlander, you've won with Shane Green against Rick Porcello, and now, like, they're sending Esmel Rogers against, I'm not sure he's pitching for the Indians, but the fact that Esmel Rogers is pitching, you almost didn't even care. It's like, yeah, sure, maybe he'll put up a good game. He's been good out of the bullpen.
Well, that series in total ups their playoff odds to 26%.
Yeah, and it'll be even better if the Blue Jays can beat the Orioles tonight. They're playing right now.
So I say a pretty successful series.
Yeah.
The Yankees are now on pace to win 84 games, which is definitely an improvement of when they were on pace to win like 80.
Yeah, at least they're on pace to finish over 500 now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, their rest of season winning percentage is still 499, but a good week like this one or another good week like this one, and you're looking at a definite run.
Yeah. I think it all really kind of started at the trade deadline when Cashman made some pretty great last, almost literally last second moves to bolster the team and really make great improvements, because, you know, they had the kind of stunning trade with the Red Sox. They haven't traded the Red Sox in 17 years, but they got a Stephen Drew for Kelly Johnson, which, I mean, I guess the Red Sox just kind of took Kelly Johnson just to take the roster spot from the Yankees.
Yeah, I thought that was, I mean, I guess the point was that they wanted to just offload his contract, and he's only a half a season, but at the same time, they could have gotten a low-level prospect, like a very, 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 like, depth-word guy. They didn't have to get back Kelly Johnson, who still hasn't played.
No, he was still in the DL when they got him. And
yeah, and had to be approved by the commissioner.
I think the idea was just to get Stephen Drew off the roster so that Xander Bogaerts could play short, so that Will Middlebrooks could play third. And maybe then you have Kelly Johnson just cover random spots if one of them gets hurt or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it's just more curious they didn't ask for something, like, prospecty, like, even if it was really minor, like a player to be named later.
Maybe, but I guess
like a Brady Lale.
Oh, see, the thing is, like, I wouldn't have even wanted to give up Brady Lale.
No, yeah, I would give up like Ronnie Batista or something, someone like really just like minor.
Yeah, somehow even more minor than, like, you know, Rafael DePaula or Pete O'Brien.
Yeah, someone like Dylan McNamara.
Oh, I like that name. That's good.
Yeah. So that was interesting. And then the Prado deal came literally right at 4 o'clock. We were all obviously on our phones and on Twitter at the exact deadline. And we thought the Drew deal was the only one. And obviously the Prado deal came right after that. And that kind of made me feel better about the trade deadline. If it was just Drew, I would have been kind of pissed off. But I think the best part about the Prado deal is it keeps Ichiro off the field.
Yeah.
And it gives the Yankees more flexibility in the infield and in the outfield.
That's pretty important at this point, because Ichiro is not an everyday player. And I think it wasn't a shocker that they're like, yeah, we can't do this anymore. So it was good that they got Martin Prado. And, like, while Peter O'Brien's good for dingers, he's not really good for much else, and he doesn't really have a position. So I don't mind taking on Prado. I think he'll probably do a little better than he was doing with the Diamondbacks. And they also control him for 2 more years, too, which is different than the rest of the guys they acquired who are all rentals. But Prado is under contract through 2016. So he's a guy who, even, like, if his game falls apart, he can still cover pretty much any position in the field. So that's just a useful guy to have. And he can hit a little bit, too.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And he's not completely lost at the plate. You know, like, he's up there, and, like, he's a major league regular player, you know, which is something that you just, at the bottom, I mean, if you think about the bottom of the lineup right before the trade deadline, you literally had, like, Zelus Wheeler, Ichiro, and Brian Roberts in 7, 8, 9, which essentially was, like, if you didn't score between 1 through 6, that was 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
At least with, like, Prado and Headley and Drew, there's at least, like, a shot something's going to happen. And if you look at, you know, today's game, Drew had the big hit of the game with the RBI double, which was really lucky for the Tigers, because that shouldn't have gone into the stands, and that should have been better than it was.
Yep.
So definitely huge, and the team feels completely different than it did a month ago.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, all of the deals are logically sound. Like, there could be bad results out of them, but I don't think you can argue with, like, what they did logically.
Yeah. I read something. I was talking to Justin, Bopp on Twitter, and he said something interesting that I really liked about in terms of analyzing trades. And his belief, which I kind of tend to agree in some sense, is that a trade should be analyzed based on the information that was known at the time. Like, people like to go back and say, like, oh, who was the winner and who was the loser. But I think what's just as important, which he points out, is that what the information that they knew that caused them to make that decision, which, according to this, is all very logically sound. As you said, these were guys who were playing below their talent level, who obviously had a talent level above what it was, and they were banking on the fact that you could buy low and then have their performance better, and they essentially gave up nobody for it. So I feel like even if Rafael DePaulo turns into a new ace and and Peter O'Brien hits 40 home runs a year, the information they had at the time didn't suggest that that was going to happen.
Right. There's another deal that I remember that's kind of like that. Well, I think it is like 1997, the Red Sox and Mariners made a very infamous trade where the Mariners got Heathcliff Slocum, who was just a random reliever, and in exchange they sent the Red Sox Derek Lowe and Jason Varitek. And while those guys obviously turned out to be terrific, I think at the time they weren't really highly regarded at all. So, yeah. I mean, while you can still laugh at that deal a little bit because they were trading too much for a reliever who wasn't even good when you looked at his numbers. But still, it's not as bad when you look at it at the time.
Yeah, and you can only the thing is you also don't know how good they would have been. I mean, I think Varitek still would have been a good player, mm-hmm. but you don't know how the development process would have been different in which organization. I mean, look at a guy like Brandon Moss. Brandon Moss was like considered
everywhere.
Yeah, he was like a failed prospect with the Red Sox. Then he goes to the A's, and all of a sudden, he's hitting dingers. So you don't know in an alternate reality how they would have panned out. But at the time, it could have still been viewed as a little ridiculous giving that much up for a reliever. But at the time, it wasn't so. Because if those guys flamed out, people would say, oh, yeah, the Mariners, that was a break-even deal for them.
Even look at, I believe it was Cano that was almost thrown in the A-Rod deal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone at that time would have suspected that Robinson Cano turned into Robinson Cano.
No, people were bashing him as a prospect even when he was a prospect, like a real prospect.
No, the Rangers could have had Alfonso Soriano and Robinson Cano in exchange for A-Rod, but instead they took Joaquin Arias, and thank God for that.
But again, like, you can't fault the Rangers for not taking him because he was a non-prospect. He was a player to be named later.
Yeah, no one really knew him. And actually, another guy who we were talking about Brandon Moss, guys who were top prospects who just weren't panning out just last year. You know, the Orioles wanted more of starting pitching to try to make a playoff run, so they traded for Scott Feldman, and they sent away Jake Arrieta and Pedro Strop, who were just not going to get it done in Baltimore. But then they go to Chicago, they get a fresh start, and that Arrieta is really good, and I think Strop's okay, too.
Yeah, but the whole thing with Arrieta is that the Cubs reworked his whole mechanics and his repertoire. That wouldn't have happened if he stayed in Baltimore. So there's also that factor.
I think he was just disrespecting Flanny.
Sometimes even, when you have good thought processes in trades, they're going to work out badly. But I think overall, if you make enough trades with good logic, good things are going to happen. I think that's
really it's exactly right. And I think a bigger problem is when you make an incorrect you have incorrect logic and it works out because all that does is reinforce poor logic. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the Yankees aren't really swayed by that at all. And I think that Brian Cashman's smart enough to understand the thought process behind each move. Like, he's obviously well aware and more of the things of the moves he made. He obviously has even more information than we have. So, based on the information they were having, for them it felt like a logical decision. And they've made plenty of logical deals in the past, so it's not like this is new. Yep. But it's just sort of funny when people talk about Brandon McCarthy and they're wondering why he pitched so poorly for the Diamondbacks. But obviously he knew that he wasn't as bad of a pitcher as he was the first half of the year. And the first half of the year's data wasn't really that predictive.
Should have kept Vidal Munoz.
Yeah, I think we can agree that the team is completely different, and it just feels different. It feels like a more complete and well-rounded team.
Yeah, they needed an overhaul, and they got it. So,
yeah, minor. And, I mean, the amount of additions they made were probably more significant if they went out and got David Price for, just in terms of this season. Or if they went out and got John Lester, the improvement wouldn't have really been better if they just got one big guy, which is kind of a theory behind that.
Yeah, at one point I tweeted what exactly they gave up and what they got in return, and it's just kind of ridiculous if you think about it, because all in all, throughout July, they traded the combination of Vidal Nuno, Genhaver Solarte, Rafael DePaula, Kelly Johnson, and Pete O'Brien for Brandon McCarthy, Chase Headley, Steven Drew, and Martin Prado. That's just so many improvements for so little cost. It's just remarkable.
I mean, it's really more of a Billy Beane type move. when you think about the way that he operates, and that's kind of because it's interesting because most GMs and front offices would be inclined to go after a big signing or a big free agent because that's what's appealing and that's what you feel is going to give you the biggest return. But all of those moves combined are definitely more than getting one of those guys. I think Sports on Earth, may they rest in peace, did a piece on the value added based on each trade. And the Yankees were first out of every team. And that included the A's and that included every other team and Red Sox that traded for these larger upgrades, the incremental ones together. I mean, there's more, and also it diversifies risk. Because if you get John Lester and he doesn't work out or he gets hurt, that's it. You've lost the full value of that trade. But if, like, Chase Headley gets hurt, the rest of the guys are still healthy. Or if one of them does poorly, the rest of them still play as they would, ceteris paribus. So that's kind of the other thing, is you also spread the risk around multiple areas of the field. So you don't have to worry about, like, oh, if he gets hurt, that's it. The whole investment's lost.
I mean, I just think it's a huge disadvantage giving up Yonhever Solarte. He's part of the future, man.
Yeah, he's going to be the new cap. He was going to be the new captain.
Yes. Well, I think it's pretty clear that we think that the Yankees did a really good job at the deadline. So that's pretty good deadline summer for us.
Right. Yeah, they did good.
Cashman knows baseballs. And something else that's really good that could be happening in August, looks like Michael Pineda is on the way back, and maybe after he starts, I think he's starting in Scranton on Friday, but I think his next start could very well come with the Yankees, or at worst the start after that, as long as everything goes well with his health, which, you know, he still crossed his fingers about because he's such a wild card. But that would just be a big boost to the rotation to get a Pineda over the mysterious fifth spot, which is vacated by David Phelps when he had the inflammation, and SNL Rogers will take the start tomorrow. But I think I think everyone is pretty much said that they'd be a bit more comfortable with Michael Pineda than SNL Rogers.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I also would have to say that we should temper our expectations for Michael Pineda.
Right, he only had like 3 or 4 starts early.
I mean, I will say this. As long as he doesn't get hurt, he's going to be exciting to watch. Because I think he's a fun, young player who's dynamic, who is just nasty when he's on. But at the same time, he's going to have injuries. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest predictor of future injuries are past injuries. And considering his shoulder almost exploded, or pretty much exploded, he's going to have problems with that shoulder in the future.
Yeah,
I would not expect him. I would never expect him to throw 200 innings, in my opinion. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now when he's, like, put it behind him completely. But I would not expect more than 100 to 125 innings next year.
Yeah, obviously, I think it's his point to have to temper expectations with what we've, like, seen of him. But obviously, once you have, like, major shoulder surgery, and he's just had such problems recovering from that this year alone. I mean, when he got the Pintar suspension, it was annoying, but I don't think anyone thought that it would be like 4 months before we saw him again, because he also sustained some other minor shoulder injury that turned out to take a long time to recover.
It was a lat muscle.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the potential, obviously, is much more exciting than, like, an SMO Rogers, so that'll be good. But
yeah,
either way, it's something to look forward to.
Yep. Because at least if they fall in contention, there's at least that to be excited about.
Right. And there's also the hopeful possibility that maybe Masahiro Tanaka can make his way back this year. Though I think that even though Pineda has his own injury history, I think Tanaka's even more of a wild card, just because we're in such uncharted waters or unknown waters with the platelet-rich plasma therapy, and if it'll actually work and how effective it will actually be. Because right now, you know, he's playing catch, and that's good and all, but there's a huge difference between playing catch and when he's actually throwing, like, bullpens off flat mounds and then again off the actual mound.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's... I think... It's not like he he's on the last. It's not like, I don't think they would treat him differently if he was like on the last year of team control, but at the same time, he's a very important asset to them, probably their most important asset, because he's probably the most valuable 25 and under player that they have. So he's their future, and he's the future of their core, supposedly. So mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to take any risks. If they sense any trouble at all, any red flags, they're just going to shut him down.
They might not even say you need Tommy John surgery yet. They might just try to wait, give him rest, and see if he comes back fresh in 2015, depending on how his rehab goes, obviously.
Because right now the tear in his ligament is about 10%, I think it was, 10% of his ligament.
I think it was like a little bit less than 10% or something like that.
Less than 10%, so it's not major, but it's still, any irritation of that can cause it to maybe become a partial tear.
Yeah.
A serious partial tear. So I think at the second he's like, oh, I feel a little bit of discomfort, okay, shut down for the season.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, come on, what are the odds? Do you think there's no possibility that he comes back, throws one major league start, and feels discomfort, he's shut down? I think there's a good probability. I personally think that he will make it as far as a minor league rehab start, and he'll feel a little discomfort, and that'll be it.
I would be amused if he ended up in a minor league rehab start, because I think by the time he actually gets to minor league rehab, it might be playoffs in the minors. So that'd be funny. It's like, we have a ringer. Masahiro Tanaka starting in the Eastern League playoffs or whatever.
Yeah, it's really just a big conspiracy by the Eastern League that, like, the Trenton Thunder really just, like, orchestrated this whole thing so they could win the Eastern League.
Yeah. I think Trenton's kind of bad, but yeah. Oh, man.
But, plot of a really crappy 90s sports movie.
Yes. And then there's, like, one career minor leaguer who's, like, you know, kind of like the Crash Davis type in Bull Durham. He's like, I'm not intimidated by anyone. And then he ends up hitting, like, the game-winning homer. No one cares.
It's a walk-off home run to win the Eastern League, and Tanaka just shrugs and goes and gets in his yachtacopter.
Yes. Right, it's gonna be a while before we actually know if there's any even slight chance of Tanaka coming back. I think everything has to break right. I'm operating at this point as if we're not gonna see him in 2014 again. And if he's on the opening day roster in 2015, then that's great.
Yeah.
If he appears this year, then that's just a bonus.
Yeah, I guess that's a realistic would say. I mean, I would actually prefer that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I can understand the thinking of those who prefer it, but I can also understand why the Yankees are like, well, if he's even like feeling pretty good about himself, then we're going to try it. And if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. They shut him down.
Yeah, but I think in this, if he continues to react well to the treatment, which it seems like he is, then I feel generally more confident that he'll come back next year than I did when he first had the partial tear. Because when I heard that, I initially thought that he was going to miss all of next year. And I kind of just, that was my expectation. And I guess I'm just sort of working my way up to like, oh, maybe he'll pitch all of next year. But at the same time, there's also a good possibility that he starts next year and he doesn't last.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, any discomfort, they're going to shut him down. I mean, it was just like what happened with Cliff Lee.
Oh, God, that was unfortunate to watch. I'm not a big Cliff Lee fan, but that's just... You know, he threw a pitch and they screamed like, ah, F, you know, and
yeah, that was
pointed
it.
To
it,
pointed to his elbow left. And, you know, now he's shut down for the season.
And he's having the same treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting to see how he also reacts to that and what type of treatment. And he's also much older.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you'd regenerate more quickly at 25 than you would at like 34.
Probably.
So that'll be interesting. That's more of just like a thing to look for, not like a thing I'm actually expecting.
Yeah. On the more minor injury front, we already touched on Phelps a little bit. It sounds like we won't see him for at least a month because they said he's not going to pick up a baseball for 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, you know, he'll need a throwing program. He might get a rehab start or something. And it did sound like that's what Phelps needed because, I mean, I think he's pitching more innings than he ever has before. And that'll just naturally put more stress on his elbow. And if there's inflammation, then, you know, just shut him down. So he's already pitched. He's pitched 108 innings, so that's not terribly much. But he's started more games than he's ever pitched at the major league level before.
And also, midway through the season, not even midway through the season, partially through the season, he was changing rhythm from being a reliever to being a five-man rotation.
Right, right.
So yep. For, like, first month or so, he was completely, like, every other day he was, like, pitching.
Yeah. The last time he had pitched this many innings at this point in the season was 2010.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's going to be a bit of a challenge for him, but, you know, at least Pineda seems to be on track to come back, and he'll conveniently take that spot as long as he comes back healthy. And otherwise, I guess Esmael Rogers will just cover it in the meantime, unless he gets bombed on Friday, which I suppose is possible.
Yep, definitely possible. Then they'll push Pineda along.
Yeah. Esmael Rogers has been kind of impressive. Like, very quietly, not, like, expecting it to last that much longer, but, you know, I think he hasn't allowed a run yet.
It's just a nice, pleasant surprise.
Right,
that's
right.
All.
Well, like, when he came into that game in his first game, it's like, ah, yes, the Esmael Rogers era, and I'm being all sarcastic. Then he threw, like, three scoreless innings. I'm like, wait, what?
It was like 7-4 when he came in. I was like, oh, here it goes. It's going to be like 10-4 in a minute. And then it wasn't.
Which is more than what we can say for Rich Hill.
Yeah.
Rich Hill, rest in peace.
Probably. Because Brian Mitchell's getting called up to serve as a long man in the bullpen tomorrow. By tomorrow, I mean Friday, so... I assume he's like the caddy to Esmael Rogers in case Rogers gets bombed, because he was scratched from his scratched from his start. So he'll be arrested and ready to come in if Esmael Rogers doesn't do well. But anyway, someone's gonna have to go, and I feel like it's probably gonna be Rich Hill, and I think that'd be pretty funny because he appeared in one game, he hit a guy, and that would be his only ever Yankee appearance. Do 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 do. Yankeeography, Rich Hill. Even better than John Soto sitting on the stool. Sterling's like
a 3-second Yankeeography.
They just show the clip of him drilling whoever it was, and then being taken off the mound.
It would be great if they did the Yankeeography, like, with the whole bio about his life and his youth and the coming up to the minor leagues, and then they show the one hit by pitch, and then it just immediately ends. Like, building and up, like, when they have slow-mo pitching and, like, the grainy photographs.
The end credits music is in Yakety Sax.
One can dream.
I was saying to Tanya that, you know, the Yankees, I think it looks like they're having their team picnic day. So I'm just imagining Brian Cashman standing at the top step of the dugout, welcoming people. It's like, oh, hey, Brandon, how's it going? Hey, D-Rob, you looking good? Oh, hey, Rich. Let me take you aside for a moment.
Or, like, Rich Hill doesn't get the company memo.
It's like, oh, man, why didn't I get the memo about the barbecue?
And
think about that. That's
what we knew about him. Was talking about.
You want a plate to go?
Enjoy your food, Rich, because they're not getting any more per diem. Why is that? Well, then Brian Mitchell shows up.
It's not you. It's not you, it's me, Rich.
Yeah. And he, like... They get Jim Miller to come out and bring him home. And Chris LaRue. And they all go eat at, like, a Denny's together. They're like, I thought we were true Yankees. Cesar Cabral tries to come, but he walks into the doorway.
Yeah, he got in a car. He, like crashed his car into, like, the pole or something. Oops.
Wade LeBlanc.
Yeah.
God, that sport quiz is going to be just a pill.
Well, the other day it was at 50 people, and I came on number 40, and I've only added more Yankees since then.
Oh, yeah.
That was before Rich Hill actually pitched, so now it's at least 51. Another person.
They're at 51 now, yeah. And if Brian Mitchell pitches,
yeah,
he'll be 52.
52.
Oh, man. Pride, Power, Pinstripes.
Last year was 56. We're like,
yeah, that was the record.
So many people, 56. And then they're going to break it this year.
Oh, yeah. They already tied or passed the second most in team history. But they're not even, at September yet, so they're probably going to blow by last year's mark.
Of what number of players used?
Yeah.
Nice. Yankees.
I think the Rangers have already used, 59 or something like that.
Yeah, they use way more. Man. Also, a reminder, which I saw on McCovey Chronicles, that Travis Ishikawa is a member of the 2014 Giants.
Yes. Tradition.
He's the zombie player.
Yep. Okay, well, we're off on a little tangent there, but I think that'll do it for our topics. Unless you have anything, you guys have anything more?
No. I think we've covered everything.
Yeah. Oh, Mark Teixeira is not injury prone. His finger just ran into a spike. It happens. Whatever.
Yeah. He's not made of tissue paper. He's not a man made of glass. He literally had his hand sliced to the bone with a cleat.
Yes.
That doesn't mean he has soft tissue. It just means that he was literally stabbed with a cleat.
Right. Oh, boy. Well, I don't see how anyone can speak ill of Mark Teixeira, what with the revelation of foul territory this year, so.
Yeah, the talk about not liking Mark Teixeira is one of the strangest things to the Yankee fandom.
Yeah, he was never going to live up to the $180 million contract they signed him to. So it's just, you can't have those expectations at this point. You can't really expect 2009 or 2010 at this point. He's doing okay this year, and that'll do.
But at the same time, if you look at him as a career player, even if he ended his career today, he had an excellent career. He was a great, he was a great, great first baseman. I mean, when his career is all said and done, he may be a Hall of Very Good type of player.
Yeah.
Which people seem to forget.
He's already hit 360 homers in his career, and he's only 34.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. He had very, very big home runs in the playoffs for the Yankees and, won a world championship. It's just one of those things that just racks my brain. How people just don't like Mark Teixeira. And he's never, said ill of anybody. He's never gotten any confrontations. He's never been, mean to the media or anything like that.
I think it's just the whole... People have unrealistic expectations of Yankees first baseman for some reason. And I don't know. Maybe it's just because they've had... they had Gehrig, and he was, one of the... Probably the greatest first baseman of all time, and they loved Don Mattingly a ton. Obviously, for understandable reasons, since he was one of the few bright spots in the 80s and the early 90s. And Tino has a whole big fan base too. But Jason Giambi, even before all the steroid allegations and stuff, seemed to be going through all this stuff as well, because he's not an average hitter anymore because he's too worried about hitting home runs. It's the same people that are in the too many damn homers crowd, probably.
Yeah, I would assume. Even though if you look at Giambi's years from 2002 to 2005, man, he was good. Yeah. I mean, all that other good stuff aside, he was very, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. We love you, Mark Teixeira. Just don't shake.
Yeah, right now he's batting .230, but he has a .118 OPS plus. Because he still walks a ton.
And he still hits home runs.
He has damage.
Yeah. He's only played in 84 games, and he has 19 homers. So that's pretty good. You take it. Anyway, we're going off a bit on Mark Teixeira, but we enjoy Mark Teixeira. We are in the Mark Teixeira defense crowd.
We love goofy old Tex.
Yeah, and he's such a silly person. Okay, so now we can move on to Matt F's B-Ref segment. What have you looked up this week?
Okay, well, this week I thought we'd make a little game out of it. Not an actual game, but I just want to see if you guys can figure some of these out, which is I looked up the players who have the most games started at each position when they're batting ninth. In the order. So it is a fun list of backups and just the worst guy, or not even the worst, but the least guy on really good teams.
So it's like, who's spent, like, in a season or in the Yankees' career?
In their careers with the Yankees.
Okay, so, like, who's spent, which catcher spent the most time in the number 9 spot, which first baseman spent the most time in the number 9? Okay.
Yep. Okay.
I could do this with, like, people at 4th, but 9th is more fun because it's a way more random list.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, so we will start with catcher, and I will say this, it's in the last 20 years.
Okay. You know, I'd probably say Joe Girardi.
It is Joe Girardi. He's at 199. Second place is our old friend Chris Stewart.
Of course it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. My first inkling.
Yeah, I remember Girardi, you know, because he wasn't a good hitter. He would always bat pretty far down in the good Yankees lineup in the late 90s. And I know I wasn't watching then because I was terrible at Little League and I didn't like baseball. But I know Greg has mentioned before that he used to nickname him Ofer Girardi. Which is just a very Greg thing to do. All right.
Third place is Jose Molina. But we'll move on to first base now. This one is pretty low, the number.
Yeah, I'd imagine so, because, you know, first basemen don't bat 9th very often.
I will say this. The person in first place for first base is actually in first for 2 positions.
Huh.
Miguel Cairo?
He is 4th.
That's a good guess, though.
Andy Phillips?
He's 3rd.
Oh, I'm close.
Doug Mankiewicz?
He's 2nd. It's Nick Johnson. Nick Johnson is 22, Mankiewicz is 20, then Phillips is at 16, Cairo 12, and Luis Soho in 5th on 10.
I like how we gradually built that up.
Well, because the thing is, Nick Johnson, I'm always thinking of him as such a great hitting prospect that I never think of him as a 9 hitter.
Well, I just don't even think of him as, like, first baseman, because he seemed to DH a lot more than first base. But, yeah, in 01 and 02 and 03, yeah, he was batting far down that lineup because they had so many good hitters.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, now, second base, I'll say this. The person in first is far ahead of anyone else. He's at 412, and second is at 84.
Oh, wow.
Is it Enrique Wilson?
No.
Is it, is it Cano?
No. He is 5th. It's, again, someone from, like, the last 20-ish years. But towards the end of the 20 years. Or the beginning, I should say.
Is it Knobloch?
No. I didn't see him on here.
Mariano Duncan?
No, it's Pat Kelly.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Oh, okay.
He is far ahead of anyone else. No. So now we will move on to third base.
Third base.
This guy goes in the category of, like, maybe the least hitter on really good teams.
Scott Brosius?
Yeah, Scott Brosius.
Yeah.
He's at 205. He's at 205. Second is Pat Kelly again on 73.
True.
Yep. Eduardo Nunez, 21.
Quote unquote third baseman. He's a third baseman in the same way that I'm a gardener.
Third baseman in the way I'm like a spaceman.
Yes.
All right. Okay, now we'll go on to shortstop.
Is it Jeter?
No, he's at 88, which is a lot more than I would have thought, actually.
Well, because when he was a rookie, he batted 9th, and so the tour was like, oh, that's good.
Was it Tony Fernandez?
No, this is, like, the only guy on here who wasn't, like, within the last, like, 20 to 30 years. This guy was, like, 70s.
Bucky Dent?
Yeah, it's Bucky Dent. 557.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, he was a really bad hitter.
Yep.
No, left field.
Ooh.
I would argue this is probably the best player of the bunch.
The best player of the bunch.
What,
Brett Gardner?
Brett Gardner.
Yeah.
He's at 100.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, because, you know, until, like, basically this year, Joe Girardi pretty much always bat him 9.
For what, you know, because he believed in some weird second leadoff hitter stuff.
Well, because Jeter would always bat first, and then they'd just put someone else in second that wasn't Gardner.
Yeah, which made no sense.
Like a, like a Nick Swisher or a Curtis Granderson, someone like that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I would go for center field. How about?
Is this Melky?
No, he is finished one short.
Ah!
In second place. He's at 109. The leader's at 110.
Oh man.
Ugh. Is it recent?
Am I? All right. I'll put it this way. Within the last 25 years.
It's not... 25. It's not, not Kenny Lofton, is it?
That was
10
years ago.
Wasn't Bernie.
No, not Bernie.
Gerald Williams?
No, it is Roberto Kelly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wow. I can see that.
I would have never thought of it, though.
No.
Some stats for when he owned the games, or he batted 926. So, yes.
There was one game where he batted 9th, I know, where Toronto had a pitcher, Dave Steeb, who had retired the first 26 Yankees in a row, and then Roberto Kelly doubled to break it up. And that was, like, the second time he lost a no-hitter within a week or something like that.
Yankees in a Yankee.
Yep.
Okay, right field.
Ichiro?
Raul?
No.
Raul Mondesi?
No. Okay, here's a clue. Pedro Martinez wants to know who this guy is.
Kareem Garcia.
Yep.
Who is Kareem Garcia? He's a true Yankee, that's who he is. I think he might also be playing in the Mexican League.
Oh, probably.
Everyone is.
I think Ruben Rivera is still playing in the Mexican League.
He is, yeah.
Kareem Garcia is, in fact, still playing in the Mexican League. He has 368 career homers there.
Yeah, the final one, DH.
It's so silly to have, like, your DH batting now.
Yeah, it just defeats the purpose.
It was like when the Giants DH'd Ryan Terrio because they didn't know what to do.
this one, the leader's at 26, and then second place is at 4.
Can you give, like, a normal position?
Someone
is it Nick
list.
Johnson again? Is it Nick Johnson again?
Yeah.
Damn
it. Nick Johnson.
Yeah.
Even though nobody asked for it, I just made a batting order of these people.
good.
So, Gardner leadoff. One of the Nick Johnson second. Brocious third. One of the Nick Johnsons fourth. Bucky Dent fifth. Roberto Kelly sixth. Pat Kelly seventh. Girardi eighth. Kareem Garcia ninth.
That is a... That's
batting
a bad
they beat the Astros.
I'd have to really dig into that to see if they could, because the Astros are like,
they do have Jose Altuve.
They definitely, yeah, they definitely could beat last year's Astros.
Oh yeah.
In the top four isn't the worst thing ever. Girardi, Tuna, Johnson, and Brocious. I mean, that's
and
not
it really
terrible.
Depends, and it really depends what year you're talking about with these players.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, when Gardner was batting 9th, I think he had, like, 7 R-War.
Probably.
So, yeah, I'd totally take him. He probably had more production than the whole Astros, like, team last year. Just that one year. So...
Probably. I predict that the Yankees pitcher who's batted 9th the most and since the DH era is probably Andy Pettit. I mean, who else would it be?
I know DH. I'll look this up.
Yeah, I know. You didn't query that, but that's just me thinking out loud.
What year is the DH? I can easily look this up.
DH started in 70.
74, yeah.
Because they didn't have interleague for, like, 25 years. And then, you know...
Yeah, it just pet it with 24.
Yeah. Ooh, fierce. Remember the game where Austin Romine batted ninth and David Phelps at eighth?
Oh, I don't remember this, and I should.
It's a 2013 Yankees memory. I could understand why you wanted to push that out of your mind.
There were just so many...
It was like April 2013.
There were some absolutely ridiculous things that happened that season that I just don't remember, because just every game there was some weird, like, oh, look at that, Reed Brignac is playing short, or, like, Chris Nelson is playing third. So, like, there's just so many... Every game had something like that.
Looking good there, Luis Cruz.
Vernon Wells playing third base.
Oh, God.
Surprisingly, David Phelps is first in that list. I'm pretty sure that was, like, the game where, like, Ben Francisco was around and, like, batting fifth.
Lyle Overbay batting cleanup. Memories.
Lyle Overbay playing right field because they can't afford to lose his bats.
My God. This lineup, oh my God.
The season in 86 WRC plus.
What is the lineup?
Oh my God. To this.
It was Gardner, Cano, Wells, Overbay, Ichiro, Nix, Nelson, Phelps, Romine.
Ichiro batting fifth?
Yes.
My God.
Get this.
Oh, yeah.
The Yankees won.
Oh, gosh.
Wow, Rockies, that's how you do it.
It won 3-2 after scoring a run in the top of the ninth.
Was that the one where Vernon Wells played third, or was that, like, the next game? Because I remember it was in that series.
Oh, no, it was that game.
Oh, good, good. Travis after pinch hitting.
My God, that team prior to Granderson coming back and, like, getting Soriano and getting A-Rod back, So, like, even after all that, they had an OPS plus of 88. But then if you look at the rest of the team, it was, like, Chris Stewart, 59 OPS plus. Lyle Overbay, 89. Cano, 147, which is good. Nunez, 87. Nick, 73. Wells, 74. Gardner, 110. Ichiro, 77. And then the good old DH, Travis Hafner, 87. Pride, power, pinstripes. Okay.
The go-ahead run in that game was driven in by Brennan Bosch.
I looked up the one game where Travis Ishikawa appeared, and that has a pretty good lineup too. As Griff Gardner leading off, Zoilo Almonte second, Robinson Cano third, Travis Hafner fourth, Vernon Wells fifth, Travis Ishikawa sixth, Luis Cruz seventh, Alberto Gonzalez eighth, and Austin Romine ninth.
Oh my God.
And Eduardo Nunez pinch hit for Austin Romine.
It literally, like, pick that out of a hat, it would make no difference.
Oh, and just to add to the 2013 Yankees-ness, Phil Hughes started the game, only went four innings, and he got knocked out.
Yep, that was great. That was a great, it was my favorite team, just in terms of comedic value.
Yeah, like, it was painful going through it, but now it's like, oh my God.
It was so bad. That team was so bad. And, like, they won 85 games, but they really should have won, like, 70.
Yeah. Looking back, it's still, how the hell did they win that many games? They had no
bad
business.
Baseball plus bad baseball plus time equals comedy.
They were within a game of a playoff spot in early September, I remember. And then they had the one series against the Red Sox that destroyed them. But, like, the fact that they were even close in September, just, what are you doing, American League?
Well, the AL East was not even as close as it was now.
The Red Sox ran away with it. So.
Yeah, but they, oh, God.
I'm glad that the Red Sox have returned to their 2012 ways. I'm glad they saw the error, what they were doing, and then they're like, you know what, let's go back to 2012. That's better.
must be bad again.
Mm-hmm.
They're pulling it. They're doing the Giants every other year.
Well, like, what I thought was amusing was after, you know, at the trade deadline, they traded all those pieces. They actually had a much worse record at the trade deadline this year than they did in 2012.
But that's because they also knew.
Yeah. I mean, in 2012, they had the big trade, and then they just played, like, utter shit for the rest of the way, and they had, like, a 267 winning percentage or something like that after they traded, like, everyone.
That was fun.
Yeah. Okay. Getting off topic again, but that's okay. Probably go to the tweet bag, right? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm not imagining another segment. Okay, that's... all right. So, TweetBag. A longtime listener wants to know, how many starts do you think Tanaka will make for the Yankees in 2014?
I think we talked about zero.
Guesses?
Yeah, the way we talked about this earlier, but zero.
Hmm. Well, just to make it a little bit different, I'll be bold and say three.
All right.
Just to be optimistic.
You be bold.
Yeah.
So if you have to do it, I won't say no.
I'll take my zero and go cry.
You can take a one as well. Okay.
I would actually not want to take a one. I'd rather have zero, because one means he made one start and it didn't work out.
That's true, yeah. I guess you'd hope that they would just shut him down without even trying. But I'm hoping for three, and that he'll, you know, the therapy will work.
But you're hoping the last, like, three as in last 2 weeks of the season is what you mean.
Right, right. I think it'll be a while before he can actually come back.
Okay.
All right. Next one from Greg Kirkland. Favorite Ninja Cash pickup. And also, all-time favorite ninja in general, not named Cashman. Well, I guess if we're talking about this year, I think my favorite Ninja Cash pickup is Brandon McCarthy.
Yeah, that one's mine, too. You got him for Red Dollar.
Pretty close, that's true. Mine's Headley, in my opinion. It's close. I really like the McCarthy move, but, man, Headley is good.
He is very good.
I mean, he's a pretty good bat, but he's really good defensively.
Yeah, it's such, like...
ooh, this is nice.
It's such a breath of fresh air from what they're getting at third base from Kelly Johnson and Harris Solarte on defense. Because, you know, Kelly Johnson wasn't really a third baseman. I think Solarte wasn't either. I think they were both naturally second basemen, but... Will always had that one triple play he did, Solarte. What did you say your favorite cash pickup was, Matt F?
I was agreeing with you, McCarthy.
Yeah, that's a good one. As for my favorite ninja in general, I'll have to go with Donatello.
Leonardo.
I don't even know the difference. I honestly have never seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Don't know any ninjas. They all are equal to me.
I believe in a world of equal ninjas.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I see all ninjas the same. I'm colorblind when it comes to ninjas.
Alright. Next question. From Alexander A.O., who is the likeliest player to be traded to the Yankees in August? Longtime listener replied, Babe Ruth, and I'm inclined to believe him.
Yeah.
I mean, we have no idea. We don't know who's available, really, who might be moved. A lot of these times, these, like, August deals kind of happen out of nowhere, and you don't really see them coming, and then if it's a useful player, then, like, oh, yeah, maybe that'll work out.
Like the year, it was Jeff Nelson, right, that traded bat the Yankees after he'd left.
Oh, yeah, and they had Armando Benitez for a couple weeks, and they traded him to get Jeff Nelson.
I saw it on TV. I remember that happening. I saw it on TV. I was like, huh. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's impossible to know, because for those who don't know how the waiver claim system works, players have to be, just about every player has to be placed through waivers. And teams can place a claim on them based on their priority. So the teams with the worst records in the same league have the most priority. So in general, the Yankees aren't doing terribly. They're like in the middle of the pack. So the claim, their priority is generally not that high. So it seems like the Cubs and the Astros are going to get the first claims on the players. So the only times the Yankees would make claims, it may be to block a claim from another team, not to actually make a move. So most likely, they're not going to actually get any players. Guys like, who was the one that the Marlins, Jacob Turner, like didn't even get past the first team. It just went straight to the Cubs.
Right.
So that's probably what can happen, is most players will not even get to the Yankees' claim priority. So they won't even get to touch any players.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, they may just claim them just to block them from a team that's better than them.
Yeah, and that might have actually been what the Nationals did with Matt Thorn, unless they really, really want him. And they might have just been blocking him, and the Yankees are like, yep, take him. Tag, you're it.
Well, yeah, I mean, not even blocking them, because Thornton made it all the way down the claim priority to almost the end.
Mm-hmm.
He passed just about every team until he got to the Nationals, because the Nationals have one of the better records in baseball.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, granted, a reliever like that is only going to have value to a team that's in contention, but he did pass on teams like, you know, like the Royals and the Blue Jays. So I don't know if the Yankees had intended to actually, unless they knew in advance that the Nationals were going to do that. Because a lot of times they say these agreements are preordained or prearranged, so they may say, unless somebody blocks the claim, you can take the player.
Right.
But we don't really know that. And we won't know that unless like it just pops up out of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, a lot of these times these August moves are kind of under the radar. And you might not even know they're happening. Like, everyone thought the Pirates were kind of done, and they didn't really get anyone at the trade deadline last year. Then all of a sudden, in August, they end up with Marlon Byrd and Justin Morneau. So, if there is anything like that, it'll just be random and it'll happen.
Yeah, and like I said, you won't even know until it happens, because the team doesn't even know unless it gets to their claim.
Right, and a lot of the times the guys claimed in this process are kind of just, you know, random relievers, maybe a bench player. So if it'd probably be someone like that. You don't see many deals like the Red Sox a few years ago trading Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett.
Yeah.
All right. So the answer is it's impossible to say like who is whitelist. Maybe random reliever XYZ on the Rangers. All right. Next question. Don't you hate pants? By Greg Kirkland. I do hate pants, Greg.
Yeah.
They're oppressive. They're worse.
Yeah.
All right. And one more, which is on the Twitter, from Launchpad McQuack, which is just a great Twitter name.
I think he played for the Tigers in the 80s.
Yes. And the Twitter handle is good, too. It's @_puglife with a Y and another underscore. Anyway, Launchpad asks, would this current Yankee rotation be the worst to make the playoffs, at least since the wild card add-on? Probably.
Yeah.
I was looking at some of the playoff rotations, and I would say it would definitely be the worst.
If this team won the World Series, I would be happy. But at the same time, I feel like it's a total like a rip.
Oh well, yeah. That's the
point. Yeah, it would kind of feel like 2006 Cardinals, where you're just like, wait a second, mm-hmm. we weren't supposed to win this. I mean, I would have rather had the Yankees win in 2010 or something when they were really, really good.
Yeah, but in some ways, also, like, the unexpected runs are really enjoyable, too.
Yeah, like the Rockies in 2007. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of fun. I mean, I don't think they're a bad team. I don't think they're a great team. I think they're just, like, okay. Right. But if they get in a playoff series, anything can happen.
Right, right. Some of the bad playoff rotations I've looked at from the past 2 years... Well, in 2011, you know, you had a really good guy in CeCe, a good rookie in Ivan Nova, Then you had Freddie Garcia's Smoke and Mirrors act, and then AJ Burnett when he wasn't good. 2006, it was a kind of a mix between pretty good and pretty bad, because they had Chin-Ming Wong, who had a really good year that year, Mike Messina, another really good year. Randy Johnson was pretty bad at age 42. He only had a 90 ERA plus. And then they also started Jarrett Wright, which I remember, you know, they ended up in game four of the ALDS against the Tigers. I'm like, wait, what? Jarrett Wright is the starter? This is the guy who has to save the season? And of course he lost because it sucks. 2004 had a pretty bad playoff rotation too, because they only had two starters. Well, actually, no, two, I should just say 2004 had a bad playoff rotation because they had Mike Messina, who was only league average in ERA plus that year. John Lieber was a little above. Kevin Brown was a little bit more above, but he was also, I remember, just crap by the end of the season. Orlando Hernandez was good, but he only made 15 starts that year. And then they also had to start Javi Vasquez because Kevin Brown was pitching so poorly, and Vasquez, of course, got bombed.
But at the same, on the same token, their offense was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had like a 111 OPS plus, and they had like three, they had four players over a 130 OPS plus in that team. Yeah. So that kind of made up for it in a sense. And what was also weird about the 2004 Yankees, they outplayed their Pythagorean record by like 12 games.
Yeah.
Their Pythagorean win loss was 89-73, and they won 101 games. So
that's weird. Yeah, and they also hit 242 homers as a team, which is pretty ridiculous. And the other last kind of shaky playoff rotation, in 1995 they had David Cohn, who was good, Jack McDowell, who was good, Andy Pettitte, who is pretty good, he was still a rookie, and then they had Scott Kamenecki, who was okay, but he only made like 16 starts. So, that one wasn't as really that bad, but not really a great one either. But yeah, this one would definitely be like the worst.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, we have one last tweet bag question that just came in now.
Hot off the presses.
Yeah. Is this start from Shane Green a flash in the pan or a preview of what is coming?
Don't think he's going to be doing that, like, a lot, but
no,
he could be decent.
Yeah, and he had a game like this once before against the Indians where he pitched really well. I think it might have been for eight innings then, too, or seven. So
yeah, I'm going to hold off on my Shane Green hot takes right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if this is his true talent level, this is not the star where we're going to be like, oh, Eureka, this is him. It's going to take like a considerable amount of time before like, okay, this is who Shane Green is. You know, so I think that it could be him, but I would say more likely not him.
Yeah, I mean, any rookie can have a good series of starts in a row before the league starts to figure him out. I think Shane Green could be an interesting guy. Because he's not, like, totally out of nowhere like Chase Whitley was. So.
Yeah, certainly not. I don't think he's an ace that people think he's going to be. But I don't think he's going to necessarily be a bust. Maybe a middle-of-the-rotation arm ceiling. Maybe back of the rotation arm, which is fine. If he ends up being a number five starter who eats some innings, cool.
You need those guys.
Yeah, it just saves you money. You don't have to spend $10 million on a guy who's, like, going to just eat some money.
That means fewer innings pitched for the likes of random starters you pick up out of nowhere, like Chase Whitley.
Yeah, I mean, there is value in just having innings, because that means you just don't have to give innings to somebody else. Right. So I'll take Shane Green pitching over, you know, having Esmiel Rogers and company, or having to have Jeff Francis start.
Rest in peace.
So, yeah, I'm going to just hold off until there's, like, you know, more than 20 starts. Gets that far.
I mean, I think they could rename the Cy Young Award the Shane Green Award. So
they're like, wait, he has one best star. And they're like, wait a second, we already carved his plaque in Monument Park.
No.
They just have to shave the head off.
Shane Greenfield at Yankee Stadium.
Yes. They'll retire his number when people think they're retiring Torres.
Surprise!
Shane Green's like, oh, thanks. All right.
Wait, can I ask this number?
It's like now honoring number 61, Shane Green. Wait, what? I mean, that wasn't even, I didn't even get a chance to pick my favorite number yet. Tough.
Too late. You're already the ace.
So I think that'll do it for the tweet bag. Now we'll wind up the podcast at the Yankee and the Mitre of the Week. Matt F., your Yankee of the Week.
Carlos Beltran.
He has been really come around.
Yeah, over the past week, according to fan drafts, he's hit 364, 440, 591. 188.
Well, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny how quickly what came out of replacement level, like to replacement level. He was like playing as bad as Alfonso Soriano.
Yeah, and then I think it was like around the All-Star break. After that, he started hitting again.
Yeah, he just blew up. Like the past like month and a half, he just hasn't stopped hitting.
Yep.
Like in the past month, there were only like 4 games he didn't get on base.
Yeah, he had that one streak where he's like had multi-hit games for like several games in a row, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah,
he's on pace to almost match his home run total from last year.
Huh. Well, that's pretty good considering he missed like a couple months there.
Yeah, he's projected to get either 20 or 21 home runs, and he had 24 last year.
Yeah, still makes my preseason prediction of 30 look kind of foolish, but oh well.
I mean, you know, thinking about it in retrospect, had he not had that injury, that would have been true. Because like, other than that period of time where he was injured, he was playing pretty well. Before he, like, fell over the wall, he was playing well. And then after he came back, like, in July or something, he was fine.
Yeah, and he needed, like, a bit of time to get used to pitching again, I guess. I don't know. Well, either way. Matt P., you're Yankee of the Week.
As always, the moral of the story is blame the trap. The moral of the story is...
Yes, blaming the trap is fair.
Do you get that?
Yes, always fair.
Yes, fair to blame the trap. Blow it up.
I think mine is going to be, this is close, but I think mine's going to be Brian McCann.
That's fair.
Because Brian McCann has been hitting, and hitting for power, too. He's had 2 home runs in the past 5 games. His defense has been good, his pitch framing's been good, and he's finally starting to hit to what we would expect him to hit. Not great, but still okay.
But McCann.
I mean, the beginning of the season kind of tanked him, but yeah, trade McCann. I think that he's recovering. So for the past calendar month, he's hit 281, 317, 427 with 3 home runs and 13 RBIs.
Not bad.
And that's a 104 WRC+. That's pretty much what he is as a player.
That is good.
Yep.
My Yankee of the Week will be Brett Gardner. Because, you know, he's kept hitting since his ridiculous series in Texas where he just destroyed everyone. But... yeah, it's just funny seeing him hit home runs and be up around home run leaderboards where you really shouldn't expect him to be. He's really just their best all around player right now on offense, defense, base running. He does everything well. Other guys who did pretty well. I mean, pretty much everyone in the starting rotation put in a good effort. Betances, Kelly, Robertson, they all struck out a ton of people. Esmo Rogers, you know.
Honorable mention for,
So, yeah. Good job, everyone, pretty much. Except for our Mitres of the Week. Matt F., your Mitre.
Yeah.
Oh. My Mitre of the Week is Rich Hill.
Oh, yes. I, I hope his Yankees career ends with that one hit by pitch.
Yeah, Rich Hill.
That is all.
That would be the greatest career. True Yankee. All right. Matt P., your meat trade of the week.
Think about this one for a second. Probably Matt Daly.
Yeah. He's in that same league of like
Matt Daly
to bad.
It's like you just came in, you were bad, you were gone.
Well, he's not gone yet.
Because the thing is about this week is they did pretty well, and even the players who didn't do that well still had times where they helped. Like Drew at the plate didn't have a great week, but he did have that big day to day, which basically like helped win the game.
Yeah, and he had a good series against the Red Sox too, I think.
Yeah, and he has been playing pretty well defensively, so I can't completely fault him. Right. But Matt Daly, I guess you could just say nothing positive came out of his stint.
You have done nothing for me. Congratulations. My Mitra of the week is I'm gonna have to go with David Phelps on this one. I mean, I know it's kind of harsh to blame him because he got hurt, but you know, he pitched terribly, and then the inflammation just got too much. So, sorry, David Phelps, but in a week where pretty much everyone else was good, I'm gonna have to go with you.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good week if you have to settle for the doubt the injury. You can't think of anyone else.
Yeah, I mean Chase Whitley wasn't great, but whatever.
Yeah.
And also an honorary Meteor of the Week for Matt Thorne. Bye.
I'm gonna kind of miss him.
I didn't actually hate him like some people seem to, but
yeah, me neither.
I'm glad to be without the contract, considering how you know those guys like Tyler Webb, Pazos,
Lindgren.
Oh God, Lindgren. I need to see Lindgren up in the major leagues in September. I would make me so happy. Yeah, now I'd take it too. He's just a ton of fun to watch strike out everyone because he has like a 20.7 K per nine, which just is what?
That's absurd.
Yes. And he struck out the side in his double A debut, so hopefully it won't be too long before we see him. Plus he has that rap video with his Mississippi teammates.
All right. Think about it, 20.7 is literally almost everyone.
Yep.
Well, yeah, just about. And if you think about it, it's almost to the point where it gets to like, it's almost like a logistic curve where just get like, as you go up further, it just gets harder to increment by 1K per nine. So like 20 Ks per nine is just so far up there that it's like, it's almost impossible to go from 20 to 21 to 22.
Unless he struck out the side, which is what he did, because he improved
it. Yeah, exactly.
Like, he improved it from, like, 20.3 to 20.7.
Yes, yeah, just so hard to go up that high.
Okay. So, that'll do it for the Pinstripe Valley podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, at Pinstripe Valley. Follow the GIFs account, at PSA_GIFs. You can follow me on Twitter, at MernsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter, at MattF15. Follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at MattProv94. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeValley. Send us your tweet bag questions. Always love answering your tweet bag messages. Helps us focus the podcast and really figure out what you want to hear us talk about. And, of course, rate and review us on iTunes. We'd really love to hear feedback. If you like the setup, doing things right now, or any things you want to see changed or whatever. So, do you have anything more, Matt F., Matt P.?
Nope. Go Yankees, go baseball.
That is fair. Keep up this winning thing. I'm a fan of that.
That would be nice.